Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So we'll hear from Brian Callahan, Denard Wilson, and Nick Holtz, of course, Titans head coach and defensive and offensive coordinators, here in just about 10 minutes or so. And it's a press conference on the offseason program. Of course, the Titans are starting earlier than other teams in the NFL with a new head coach. You start the offseason program about a week sooner than the rest of the league. But I do fully expect there to be draft questions peppered in there of, you know, what they want to do offensively, how they want to build this team. What do we want to hear from Brian Callahan?
I just like hearing him talk. Like I like hearing what he's about, learning more about him and the coordinators as well. So I don't know if I'm looking for anything super specific here. But to me, it's just a general sense of let's see what his presence is about. Let's kind of file away some of the things that he says and kind of use them as we go forward here, just to kind of see what his vision is. You know what I'm saying? Like I feel like we're referencing things that Andrew Burnett and Barry Trotz said in the very, very first press conference, right? But it's been interesting to watch those themes be put into play because I think that's the goal of any coach is you want to build that culture.
Yeah, you do. I mean, what more can we hear that will, you know, change the way we think or what we think about this team headed into the draft? I'm sure he's going to be very coy about things. I think he's going to try to keep it more so to, you know, it being our first day of, you know, organized stuff, even though it's not mandatory. The guys, I'm happy to have the guys back in the building, met with some guys. They can't throw the football or anything else. So it's basically just working out. So I'm sure he'll try to, as best he can, use his talking time to really talk about the offseason and what they're expecting and, you know, what they want to accomplish in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Will they say something about the draft? I'm sure. But there's nothing that I want to hear because they're not going to tell us nothing that's going to have any meat on the bone.
They can say a lot without saying a lot.
Yeah, they can, but I think they're going to try to keep it to the off, like to the this portion of the off season, you know, they may obviously there's going to be questions asked about the draft, and they're going to answer them. But I think they would try to keep it more so of what's going on now, what guys are here, what they're expecting from guys this off season.
Yeah, I first of all want to know who's there.
Yeah.
I fully wholeheartedly expect Will Levis to be there at the very least. And one thing that I do want to hear is we talked to Tim yesterday, Willie, before you were able to hop on when you were at Morning Skate. I asked Tim, what should Will Levis be doing right now? And he said essentially asserting himself as a leader, asserting himself as I'm the guy, something he wasn't able to do last offseason when Ryan Tannehill was in the building. So I do want to hear from Brian Callahan, like, what's Will Levis been up to? What kind of growth do you feel like you've seen him make over the last couple of months now that he is the guy?
I can tell you he was at the Predators game last night, so that's one of the things. He was in the building. He was in the Predators building. So Maybe he's catching a little fever here.
Was he shotgunning a beer on the Jumbotron?
No, I don't think so. But
maybe that's for the best.
Yeah, Taylor Lewan maybe hasn't gotten to him yet.
Yeah, maybe.
Remember Marcus Mariota?
Maybe we'll earn that right to shotgun a beer.
Mariota was in front of the offensive line,
who
collectively shotgunned, I think Taylor Lewan shotgunned the beer through a catfish.
Yeah, the luge, yeah, right. To the, yeah.
The look on Marcus Mariota's face was like, okay, these are my guys.
What did I just give us?
Okay, so maybe chapter two is coming. 2.0 is coming with Levis. Who knows?
And I do wonder, are there any sort of smoke screens that we're going to be taking advantage of today? Mm-hmm. Because I saw 2 days ago that Chargers tight ends coach was talking about, we want to be an offensive line-centric team. Like, oh, do you now? Like, I don't think that was put in there by accident. So I do wonder, do we hear Brian Callahan talk about how great these wide receivers are? And then that's a smokescreen because they're just going to take Joe Alt at 7. So a couple of things to look for there. We will hear from Brian Callahan when we get back. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Titans head coach Brian Callahan is up at the podium, so we'll send it over to him now.
It looked like, and you start at the very basics. You make no assumptions that even though these guys have all played a long time, we started with teaching how we're going to get in the huddle and how we're going to break the huddle and then how we're going to line up. All of those things, it's a very step-by-step process. We don't skip steps and you don't make any assumptions. And so a lot of that's going to be starting from the ground floor on the offensive and defensive and special team systems, as well as getting to know the players. So we're making sure we have plenty of time for each position coach to have their meeting time so they can set their expectations and standards and just get to know who these guys are. I mean, this is our first exposure to them in a football setting. And I think it's important, as I've stated multiple times now, that the relationships we have with the players is an integral part of how we're going to operate. And so you have to work to build those relationships. It's a process and it takes time. And, that's what this time of year is for.
What was your very opening message to the guys first time in front of them?
Really two things. I think that I said it in my opening press conference too, and two critical factors that we want our team to be when you turn our tape on is relentless and resilient. And they got that message the first day. It's a huge part of what I believe in. And then the other part of it is just some very simple things that we have expectation-wise. I don't do rules. I don't have a lot of things that they need to abide by. But, I want guys to be themselves. I want guys to be on time. And I want to protect our team. And that's really what I live by. And so that's sort of the first opening message that they got. We'll talk every time I have a team meeting, usually once a week at this point, on what some part of our culture that we want to make sure we emphasize. So it's a slow process. We're not racing against anything to get all those things introduced. But the opening message was certainly that we want to be a relentless and a resilient football team.
How maybe has the attendance been so far? And if assuming it's good, how maybe encouraging is that guys are excited about what's coming up and maybe the new regime?
Yeah, there's been great energy with all the players in the building. Even as guys were filtering into town over the last 2-3 weeks and showing up and working out, I just felt an excitement. You know, anytime there's change, you can handle it one of two ways. You can be disappointed by it, or you can be excited and ready to embrace whatever comes your way. And I think these guys have done a great job of embracing the newness of it all. These are always fun, man. I never know what's going to happen. But our guys have done a great job of embracing the newness and the excitement of what's to come. And I think that I've appreciated that from them. And I think as you get to talk to them as the weeks go on, you'll get their perspectives on it. But I've felt really good about the start we've had this week.
Is the attendance good at this point? How much does it matter to you that everyone – as many people as possible here.
Right? Yeah, we want everybody here if we can have them, but it's a voluntary program. We can't make anybody be here. There's no ramifications or repercussions to not being here. And so guys have places they work out, people they like to be around. It doesn't stress me out too much. We'll coach whoever's here. Eventually they'll all be here. You know, they have to be at some point. So the guys that don't show up, that's on them. It's not a thing I get worried about or mad about or anything like that. They handle their business and we'll be together when we're together. But I've been pleased with the attendance. I've been happy that the guys have been here, the guys that are here. And if someone misses a day or two or misses a week, misses 4 or 5 weeks, it doesn't really matter to me at this point. We're going to coach as hard as we can, as much as we can for the time we're allotted, and whoever's here is going to be here. But I've been very pleased with our attendance so far in this first week.
You have a rough number or percentage on what that is?
No.
Obviously a big time for Zach right at the beginning. What's maybe different or unique about his philosophy, and what do you want him conveying to the guys right out of the gate?
Just the style that we're going to work with in that space, in the performance space. You got a really great staff. It's a numbers wise a heavier staff. You got 6 on the staff plus Lauren, the nutritionist. So you got 7 people in the performance world for us. And I just love their plan. I love their energy. It's an old school. There's old school elements that have to be a part of that. You know, you still have to do hard things. You have to lift hard. You have to condition. But then there's also the science factor of as making sure we're doing the right things, when we're doing them, what the loads are. There's a lot more that can go into that. I'm not a performance coach. I don't know all the details the way that he does. So at some point, maybe you guys will get to talk to him. But there's a science part and the management part that filters in with the hard part. And I think that they do a great job of mixing that process together. And
will the guys notice a difference, you think, right away there?
I would hope so. You'd have to ask them. I don't want to speak for them, but I'm personally very excited about what that looks like so far, and the plan that they've presented and put together that we've had meetings about, and how this is going to go for phase 1, 2, and 3, and into the season and training camp. So really, really excited about that group and what they've done there.
Levis, how do you go about that process of like making him establish himself as the leader? Like, do you pull him aside, pour more time into him, or like, how do you do that?
I want Will to be him. He's got to do it in his own way, and you can't make people do anything that's outside of their character. It doesn't come across as genuine. And I think Will does a really good job of staying true to who he is. And there's obviously things along the way that I think are that I'll think are important, and I'll make sure that I convey those to him. But I'm not going to ask him to go be anybody that he's uncomfortable being. I need Will to just be the best version of himself. And he's got a job to do as the leader of the offense, as a leader of the football team. And I think he understands that. And I think that's the biggest part, is understanding what your role is, and that you have to be visible. People have to see you. You have to make sure you're building the same relationships that I have to build as the head coach. You're building them with everybody across the team, because the team needs to see you and ultimately have a relationship where they believe in you. And I think that obviously went a long way of doing that last year in his time that he played as the starter. I think he started to realize how important it was. I've been very pleased with his demeanor, his actions as he started the offseason program. And again, we're in our first few days, but really excited about where he's headed in that role. And so again, there's going to be, we have a lot of resources here. I told all the quarterbacks the other day that one of the unique parts about playing quarterback in the NFL is you have a staff of people that have a ton of experience. We've got guys from all over the league on both sides of the ball. Use our intellectual property, ask them questions, talk to guys. And if you can find something that helps you, there's a lot of people here that are willing to do that. So I think that he understands that there's a seeking nature to where he's at right now as well, is trying to find out all the information he can from every which way he can find it.
In terms of that, with Will being a young guy, how important is it to try to find that balance between still learning what's going on and learning what his role is going to be versus having to assume that leadership role?
Yeah, it's a two-pronged process. It kind of happens simultaneously, but if you ever were to ask anybody that plays what comes first, and obviously the performance comes first. And so he's going to pour into learning a new system, learning what's asked of him, how to execute at a high level. And in his operation of learning, he can help get the information of the other guys on the offense. And that's where you start to take on a leadership role. But as a leader, you always got to make sure you're taking care of what you need to take care of first, so that your example at the minimum is what you want people to follow. And I think he's done a really good job of that. But there's an element where he's got two things going on. He's trying to build relationships and be a leader, as well as learn an entirely new way of doing and playing football than he's been accustomed to in his first year. So he's got a lot on his plate.
When you talk about him doing things his way, from what you've seen so far, what is his way? How would you describe his way?
Just from what I've seen so far, and again, I'm still learning Will every day that goes on. But he's got an intensity and an intent to every time he walks in the building. I think you see that in his play. When you watch him play, you see that intensity, that fire that he's got. That's not manufactured. That's how he is. He's got a way about him that is driven. I think he wants to be a great player, and he puts the requisite work in. That part's been fun to see. Just as you see him in the offseason, he went out to California to work with some people. He's very determined to improve his game, and I think that part you have that part, you got a chance to do a lot of really cool things. But I've seen that from him in this early portion. He is front and center. He takes notes. He asks questions. He does all the things you'd want to see early in the process of a guy that's trying to improve his game and get better.
How beneficial can it be? We saw with Will Levis last year in D-Hop's relationship, and just D-Hop being that veteran wide receiver. Now you add a guy like Calvin Ridley in free agency. How beneficial is that to a guy like Will Levis who's only entering his second season?
It's hard to probably understate the help that provides, where you have two really veteran players that have experience in the NFL. They've done it, and for lack of a better term. And when you're a young player, sometimes that helps, because they can come to him and have the conversation about how they run a route, the technique. They're probably much more apt to be able to communicate that to him than he may be to communicate that to them, because of their experience. And to have experienced players around a young quarterback certainly helps, because they're not necessarily always learning the same lessons together. There's some things that maybe Calvin's been through with his quarterbacks in previous places that he can share an experience or a story that may help that process move quicker than if you got two young players trying to do it together and sort of finding their own way. These guys have found their way. They're really proven players, and that's always going to be an advantage for a young quarterback.
First time we talked to you since Snead is signed. How big of an acquisition was that? How do you like maybe the secondary as it stands right now?
Oh, man. I my feelings about Legarius is as having to have compete against him. He's such a fantastic player, and the mentality that he brings to the defense, and you pair him with Cheeto, two guys that are really physical, really aggressive. I think they change the whole demeanor of what you ask in the secondary and then how they play. And I think when you add Roger into that mix as well, the fire that he plays with as a nickel, that's a really good group of corners that play at a high level and demand the same standard. And I think that's what you're looking for, ultimately. Guys that play like that, but then demand it from everybody else around them. I played against Legarius enough times to have an immense amount of respect for how he goes about his business. And I think you guys got to see a little bit of it in his press conference, but he is a fantastic person on top of it. So I really feel like he's a huge addition to our team, both as a player and as a person in the locker room.
How do your days work right now with OTAs, with draft meetings, with top 30 visits?
They are busy. We start at 8 a.m. with our players. Right now, currently, with the way the phase one is constituted, our offense meets and our defense lifts. And then after a two-hour period, we flip, and that keeps us at our four-hour day. So I'm in as many of those football meetings as possible. I have a team meeting to run on Monday. I was in the special teams meeting Tuesday. I run all of our installation meetings for the offense. And then when that's over, I go right into the defense and listen to Denard do his thing. Usually get some lunch, and then I'm probably lined up to meet with whoever's in for a 30 visit, which has been at least one player a day for what feels like the last 3 weeks. I don't know if it's actually been that long, but it feels like it's been a while. We've had a constant flow of these players coming into the building. I meet with those players when they come in, and then in the afternoon we're in the draft room, and our coaches just finished reading their draft reports. Today will be the last day within the last 2 days of that, so I probably get to sit down at my desk sometime around dinner time, and then I start my prep for the next day. So they're long days, but it's fun. I've enjoyed every second of it, but we're full. I mean, my time is pretty well divided up, and there's not a lot of free time, and it's a lot of work from kind of minute to minute over the course of the day.
What's the most important thing for you out of those top 30 visits? What do you need to hear or see?
Just the same thing as always. We watch the tape. The tape's been graded. We know what the player is on their tape, but we're trying to get a feel for the person and ask the questions. And some guys we know very well about their character, and it's more of a confirmation. And some guys we're bringing in to find more out about who they are as a person. And you just try to have every bit of information you can get and gather on the person, because the tape is the tape. You grade that, but as much background information as you can get, you try to get. Some of these guys we've We've had scouts and coaches at the pro days. We've had the 30 visits. We've had the combine time. We've spent a lot of time on these players to make sure that when that moment comes, if that's the player we pick, we're very comfortable with who they are, both as a player and as a person. So it's more about just getting to know them as opposed to anything real football or technical. That is a part of the day, don't get me wrong. But for me, it's a huge part of what kind of people are we bringing in.
What do you get to start your offseason program a couple of weeks ahead of other teams? How much of an advantage is that giving you, especially in these early parts as you're meeting these players, a lot of them, for the first time?
It gives you an advantage. We chose to start our offseason program. We could have started last week. We chose to start this week just because it marries the weeks up better as it goes along. As you know, there's a handful of teams that started this week. A couple of them started last week. But the offseason program as a whole, it helps if you just start this week to match it all up. It's a huge advantage because this first week is, like I said, it's like an orientation. You know, they're trying to get to know us. We're getting to know them. There's a lot of procedural things that are new for the players here. The coaches are new. The relationships are new. So, yeah, that extra time is a huge help. So when everybody starts in the NFL next week, at least we've had some time to, get the beginning stages worked through. And then hopefully next week we're starting up and we feel like we're right on pace with the rest of the teams in the league. But it's a long process, and every extra minute helps. And, we're sort of in a little bit of a sprint between now and the start of the season with every other team in the league. And we're trying to do the best we can to catch up to the teams that are established and make sure that we're ready to play in September.
Through that process, like with the prospects and even in the draft meeting rooms, like how do you personally approach guys who have so-called off the field issues or baggage, character concerns?
You find out what it is that is considered a character concern. You know, there's I think a lot of these guys are 19, 20, and 21 year old kids. I think about a lot of the things that I did when I was that age, and I don't know that people would have, not that they were bad things, but yeah, I like to be around my buddies and go out and go to a party and do that. I mean, those are all things that these guys do. And sometimes they get unfairly knocked for some of those things. And some of them have real life issues that they're working through, that have real difficulties in their home lives growing up. And those are things that they have to work through themselves that are part of the equation. But I think you have to really make sure you're judging the kids on the right things and doing the homework on the background and making sure that you're not making any assumptions about what a college coach told you about it when the scout went in November to visit. So you really do your homework and making sure that if a character issue is considered a real character issue that that we don't want to absorb into our locker room, that we know that it's legitimate and one that we're not going to take a risk on, or maybe it isn't that and the perception is that there's issues with somebody and there are things that we've worked through and feel comfortable with. So that's what this process is for. And that's why we spend the time that we do with all these players and the 30 visits and on the Zoom interviews. And there's a ton of time invested into making sure that we get whatever those issues might be ironed out, and whether they're real, real issues that have to be dealt with or they're things that maybe aren't as detrimental as the perception might be.
How do you kind of assess the defensive line situation beyond Jeffrey Simmons? Obviously, yeah. Autry and Tart were big parts of what they've done here in the past. Both those guys are going.
Yeah, it's a position that's still in its building phase. You know, we got guys that we feel good about, but you know, just like any front, offensive or defensive front, you're never going to turn down good players that can bolster that. It always is going to start and end there. If you can play physical in the trenches, you're going to have a chance to be a pretty good football team. And so those are always areas we're going to look to add players, even when we might have what we think is a good front, which we do. There's always going to be opportunities to keep adding to it, because all I know is when you play against a team that seems to kind of come at you in waves and every player they put out there can play, that's a lot of stress on an offense from my perspective. So, the more guys you have that can rush from inside and outside, the stouter you play against the run, that's an area that you're always looking to keep adding good players to.
Ryan, first of all, we're doing well.
I am, thank you.
From there, how much does what you guys did at free agency as far as players you signed impact how you view the draft, if at all?
Oh, yeah, it's a huge part. When you start the free agency process, thankfully we have a scouting department that works their tails off and have done a really great job of getting the starting process. And when you get into this, we were late because of the hire and all that, but you have a draft and you have a free agency. And so you target a lot of your free agency based on potentially what's in the draft. And so you might have some available defensive free agents. Like we felt like there was corners that we could go sign. And maybe there wasn't as many corners in the early parts of the draft that were of the same caliber. And so those two processes work simultaneously. And as you add players of need in free agency, which is what free agency is for, you want to add players you need to have at positions that are of need. The draft then opens up for you, and you're able to take a little bit more of an open-minded approach on what the best players are at those positions. You obviously always have needs that are in your back of your mind, but when you pick at 7 and you pick at 38 and you're picking at the high ends of these rounds, you want to be open and free to take ultimately what the best player is available to you. And so free agency is a good way to supplement that. The hope is in the future that we are drafting and developing and just signing in free agency with a little bit more discretion. We had to go sign a bunch of players this year, but the goal is to always draft and develop and supplement in free agency as it goes on.
Do you feel what you did allows you to be free in that way?
I do. I feel really good about where we're at. I feel like there's going to be opportunities to draft some good players. You know, you don't control what happens in front of you. And so as these picks go off, it allows you to be a little more flexible in your approach. And whatever that pick may be, we can find that best player for us in the process. So I do feel like the free agency has opened our ability to be more open-minded in the draft.
A couple of weeks to the draft, but will there be certain guys that you'll advocate for, fight for, stand for the table for, whatever you want to call it, and what's that process going to be like with Rams?
I think you advocate and fight for guys when you have a really strong opinion, or there's a large difference maybe in the positions and where you feel like, you know, as an offensive coach or a defensive coach, you feel strongly that you might need. But it usually doesn't work that way where you're fighting for much, because you prepare, you go through all the different scenarios. You know, you work through every, you know, there might be 50 different scenarios that happen in front of us at pick 7. And so you have to work through all of those things, all the contingencies. What happens if this player is there? What happens if that player is there? Would we be comfortable with this player over that player? And you go through all of these exercises at your picks, and particularly as the first and second round for sure, because that's a process you have to work through, so you're not surprised on draft day. So by the time we get to the draft, all these conversations have been had. People have said their piece. We've had the conversations about who we prefer. And ultimately, when we make the decision, it'll be the Titans' decision, and that's everyone's going to move forward with that. So this is the time for all of those things, when people are coaches are advocating for guys they like, scouts are advocating for the players they like. You have conversations if there's huge discrepancies in the grades, and you figure out where that difference is, and you come to consensus on whatever player you're discussing. And so the process has been fun, but it's an enjoyable process. There's a lot of conversation. This is when all the advocating happens. And then by the time we get to the draft, we've cemented our plan for the most part on what directions we'll head based on what events happen in front of us.
How do you feel about where you are at tight end?
We need tight ends. We do. We only got 3 in the roster. We'll obviously take quite a few more than that at the training camp. So that's a position of need just in terms of the numbers. Feel really good about Josh Wiley and his development. Feel good about Chig, where he's at. We got 2 young players we're excited about. You know, obviously 3 tight ends isn't what you're going to take in the training camp. So there's going to be some spots to add, whether that comes from a veteran player after the draft, whether it comes from a draft pick at tight end, remains to be seen, but certainly need to add more than what we have currently. We'll probably take at least 5, probably 6 tight ends in a training camp. Generally speaking, that's usually where you're at. So there'll be some guys added to that room at some point.
Yeah, we've rolled a million different directions since you've been this head coach. What's the best part of this week and actually having a team in the building and doing the coaching part?
Just that, you know, just that. I love coaching football. I love being in the meeting room. That's where I feel like I'm in my element. And that's been the most exciting part. I love being around the players. And I've always maintained that the day the players come back in the offseason is probably the best day of the offseason, because you spend all this time in these meetings and you're with all the same people, and there's just a new energy when players come back in the building. That's what I like doing. That's what coaches like doing, is coaching football. And for me, that first day back and being able to be in a meeting room and talk football and talk scheme and be around the players, that's where I find the most joy, and that's the part I like the most. And so to answer your question, coaching again is what I've – it's made it feel the most normal for me. That's what I'm used to doing, and all the other stuff has been great, and I've enjoyed it, but coaching is what I like doing the most.
Receivers after adding Calvin to that group, how open are you to still adding to that room, and are there any skill sets or traits in particular that you feel like you might currently be lacking?
No, I think you're always open to adding to those spots. I mean, we have to have someone emerge for us at the slot position receiver when we're in 11 personnel. That's one that we got some young players I'm excited to take a look at, with obviously Kyle Phillips. Mason Kinsey's been around here a little bit. He's shown his mettle. Obviously, Nick Westbrook Akine has been involved in some of those spots over his career. So trying to find someone to merge in that spot. You know, you got guys that you're trying to always build youth and depth as well. And so those things are in constant flux. You're always trying to have another guy ready to roll. You need depth at every position. That's not just the receivers, but you're always open to those guys. And again, guys that are fast, explosive, and physical, you can't have enough of them.
As you've worked alongside, like, your father for the first time, like, in the NFL ranks, I guess what has maybe been unique or stood out about kind of how he evaluates offensive linemen and kind of what you guys need there?
You know, nothing's really stood out because I've known. I know how he operates. I know how he works. He's put in a tremendous amount of work. All of our coaches have in this process, and we started out behind, you know, so we had to get an evaluation of our roster. We had to get evaluation of the free agency. You had to get the evaluation of the draft prospects. They had to be, you know, your reports have to be in. Coaches read our reports the last 2 days. It's been a tremendous amount of work for our coaching staff, and it's one that I appreciate tremendously, the passion and effort that they put into evaluating these players on the coaching side has been fantastic. My dad's been no different. I think if you ever got to see one of his reports and how he writes and the detail he goes into, it's something to behold, I guess is the best way I can say it. Incredibly detailed, has a great vision for what it looks like and how those offensive players fit at each position across the front. And he's seen a lot of it. You know, he can draw on comparisons that not a lot of people can draw on. When he's evaluating players, he might compare somebody to somebody he coached in 1998, and half the scouts are like, who's that? You know, like, you know, he's just got such a wealth of experience in players and evaluating players that he's a huge asset for us. He's a huge asset to me personally with that position, because that's a hard position to evaluate sometimes and get right. And I feel like he's got a pretty good track record of being – pretty spot on and how he thinks guys fit and what they can do well. So a huge advantage for us to have him, and a huge advantage to our scouting staff to be able to ask him questions and lean on his expertise.
In the building in the last week or two.
Say that one more time.
You've had some enormous people come visit in the last week or two. Does it ever get less shocking, and do you feel the need to get bigger?
I mean, bigger is generally in football gonna usually be better. Especially when you're talking about guys up front, you want size and strength. And, you know, I think, you know, Denard says it sometimes, but, you know, you want to get off the bus and look good too. You know, usually that's part of it. You know, that means you've got a well-built football team. And so size and strength are things that you're always looking for, particularly in the trenches. Those are important pieces to playing NFL football, because sometimes at the end of the day, it's just simply are you able to move that person, you know? And it simplifies it, but that's what it comes down to. And so I'm not surprised by it. I like that. I like the you know, big, strong players are things that I'm a fan of. So when they walk in our building, I get excited. Even though we don't get to recruit them and sign them to scholarships, you know, we got to draft them, and you only get one pick in each round, or sometimes you don't have one. But those guys are parts of that's what we want. We want our team, when you look at us, to go, God, these guys are big and strong and physical at the places that they need to be.
In on the install meetings with Denard leading the way there for the defense, not having, let's say, the history that you have with somebody like Nick, what have you learned about Denard in those meetings, and what kind of defense he's going to put out on the field?
It's been great. Obviously, I've got some familiarity with Denard's style and where he's been. I've played against a lot of defenses that he's been a part of over the years, and so I have some familiarity with that part. But I think you just when you guys get a chance to meet some of these other guys, of Frank Bush and Tracy Rocker and the guys that have been around here, I know some people are familiar with them, but man, you want to talk about an energy and a personality that the defense has as a staff. That's been the most fun for me. The scheme is what it is. Everyone runs some versions of the same things to some degree. So it's the manner and how you teach it. And I think that's what's been really fun to me, is to watch these guys teach and watch their energy and see how they interact. That part's been really cool for me to watch. That's what means more to me. I mean, the scheme is scheme. We have all the answers. We have all the blitzes. We have all the coverages. But watching them teach how they do that, the technique, the fundamentals, the expectations, has been really cool to watch. And I think Denard's a phenomenal teacher. He's got great energy in front of the room. I was in there just watching his opening meeting, and I was like, man, I want to go play defense. Like, do I get to come? Do I get to be part of the defense too? So that part was cool. That was really fun to see.
Jr. is like, you go through the process, I mean, obviously no work at the combine, et cetera. Does it make it tougher for you to evaluate him, or do you just kind of just rely on the tape?
No, I mean, the tape tells you the story. You always like to see guys excuse me, in person when you can, but there's a handful of guys every year, probably from now until the end of football, that are going to be in a position where them working out doesn't really do them anything more positive than not working out. You know, Marvin is probably going to be a top five pick, most likely, and no working out was going to change that. So I don't really, doesn't bother me. You know, when that happens, you obviously would prefer to see guys in person and work out, but if they don't, they don't. His tape tells you the story. He's played enough football to where you can get a pretty good evaluation. And then again, you meet with the person and you see why he's the way he is, and it makes a lot of sense when you do that. So, you know, there's going to be those guys every year, and this is going to come up probably every time we have these conversations. So it's just part of what the draft has become and the pre-draft process has become. So I don't really think too much about it. We just evaluate the tape.
Kickoff rule in the league, yeah. You know, the shift in technique for kick coverage and kick blocking. Do you want Bill involved in that process as far as teaching techniques to guys who maybe haven't learned those blocking techniques before?
Yeah. I think it's different. You know, those special teams guys, they have a different way of doing things that maybe not doesn't quite correlate the same way. There's certainly mechanics that they can have conversations about, but Colt Anderson, I think, will do a hell of a job teaching what that's going to look like. It's going to change. You know, the kickoff is going to be very different. There's some evolution and unknowns that are involved in that rule that I'm excited to see how it shakes out. You know, you got a lot of really smart special teams coaches that'll try to find every which way to make an advantage for their team. And some of it might be blocking technique. Some of it might be the personnel you use. Some of it might be the schemes in the return. And that part to me is exciting. It's unknown, so I don't know what it's going to look like. But there's going to be something new and exciting about it, and I think that's what the league is hoping for, is that there's some new excitement to a play that's essentially been dead for the last 2 years. And I'm looking forward to seeing what these guys come up with.
Yeah, you got it.
All right, we'll hear from Titans offensive coordinator Nick Holtz coming up next. We'll catch up with Jonathan Hutton at noon. Caroline, Willie, D. May say Preds fans don't miss tonight's Smashville Live show at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue at 6 p.m. See your Predators star players up close and personal, plus get autographs and pictures. This week's special guests are Ryan McDonough and Luke Shen. Smashville Live brought to you by the Black Abbey Brewing Company and ESPN Bet Sportsbook.
When you look at your group of wide receivers after adding Calvin to that group, how open are you to still adding to that room, and are there any skill sets or traits in particular that you feel like you might currently be lacking?
No, I think you're always open to adding to those spots. I mean, we have to have someone emerge for us at the slot position receiver when we're in 11 personnel. That's one that we got some young players I'm excited to take a look at, with obviously Kyle Phillips. Mason Kinsey's been around here a little bit. He's shown his mettle. Obviously, Nick Westbrook Akine has been involved in some of those spots over his career. So trying to find someone to merge in that spot. You know, you got guys that you're trying to always build youth and depth as well. And so those things are in constant flux. You're always trying to have another guy ready to roll. You need depth at every position. That's not just the receivers, but you're always open to those guys. And again, guys that are fast, explosive, and physical, you can't have enough of them.
Notice anyone missing there? It was Brian Callahan, just spoke with the media.
Yep.
He talked a lot about a lot of receivers.
Mason Kinsey, Nick Mason Westbrook, Kinsey.
Yeah, Nick Westbrook, I didn't even know he was still on this
team. Phillips. I didn't know Mason Kinsey was still on the squad. Kyle Phillips. We talked about all these names except one.
No mention of Treylon Burks.
No mention of Treylon Burks.
Now, he could be talking about guys to fill in the slot.
Slot position,
and he doesn't view Treylon as a slot player, a slot receiver. So I'll give the BOD there.
Uh-huh.
But I find that interesting.
Yeah. But he had a long answer about both, Ridley. You know, the both returning, not returning, because one of them was a free agent pickup. But he was ready with a long answer on the how valuable is the relationship with DeAndre Hopkins, and now you've got another guy coming in that's going to, Calvin Ridley. Long answer on both of those guys.
No Treylon.
So maybe it would have taken a specific question about Treylon, but I'm very curious.
Somebody should have asked a specific question about Treylon, because that's big in the framework of where is this receiver room? Are you counting, you know, Treylon Burks, or are you not counting him? Like, do you expect him to come in and compete for, you know, a starting job, or just a, you know, that third wide receiver position? Or are you just like, okay, it's whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not in our thought pattern moving forward. You're not in our future. So whatever you do it, but we plan on doing something else. It was kind of odd that he did. Now, again, he was asked specifically about Calvin Ridley. He was asked specifically, I believe, about DeAndre Hopkins and how does that whole dynamic works. I guess if he was specifically asked about Treylon Burks, he would have gave an answer, but nobody asked about Treylon Burks. Mm-hmm. They asked about the slot position. And in his mind, the slot guys, Mason Kinsey, Kyle Phillips, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. So does that mean he you know, Treylon isn't on the forefront of his mind in regards to what they want to do with this offense?
If he was, don't you think he'd mention him? If you're mentioning Mason Kinsey, who frankly I didn't even know was still here.
Yeah, me either.
Is he on a roster? Like, does he need to be on a roster? Is he just always in a case, like just break glass in case of emergency? Mason Kinsey is here.
He's always
if you
there.
Need one. Yeah.
It's like the, you
what's
know,
his official status?
I have no idea.
Is he
but clearly,
practice squad, developmental
he's
squad?
He's here in some capacity. Yeah. I mean, and I find it strange.
And by the way, I'm a big fan of Mason Kinsey. The guy works his tail off. He would do 100%. Anything to stay in this league and apparently on this team, because he's not going.
Apparently, he's still
nobody
here.
Else is. Yeah. Nobody else is calling him to put him on a roster. So he's trying to make it happen. And I hope I've seen him do some nice things out there. He's okay, but it's just interesting that he gets mentioned.
And not Treylon Burks.
In any capacity.
I would have noticed if he would have mentioned Treylon Burks, because Brian Callahan doesn't know how to pronounce his name. He calls him Treylon, and has ever since day one, and it drags me crazy every time he calls him Treylon Burks. It irks me. It gets under my skin.
Know your player's name first.
Well,
Treylon. I guess you don't consider him one of his players, because he damn sure didn't mention him when you were talking about the receivers.
Interesting.
Maybe he just got stage fright. Maybe he just I don't want to mispronunciate his name. I don't know.
I guess so. Well, yeah. When you can't pronounce a certain word, you try to stay away from it. But damn, you could have said Burks.
I know. Right?
Yeah. You could have just said Burks, you know.
Our guy T back there.
Yeah,
I was just making
Burks,
a joke.
But yeah, that was kind of odd that he didn't mention Treylon. This is the game, whether they plan it or not. This is what I don't like. Like, if he's not in your plans, let's make some moves to try to get him somewhere else so you can pick up a position or another draft pick in this year's draft, or maybe even next year's draft. But playing these mind games, you know, it's like it does nothing for anybody. To me, you just tell, be upfront with the guy. Listen, and maybe they have. I don't know. Maybe they have. Listen, this is your year. If you don't show us something, you're not going to be here. You're not going to have a spot on this team. You do that to a player, and then see what their reaction will be in regards to their play or their practice habits or their workout habits. But don't just sort of kind of leave this thing in limbo or purgatory and he not know and he's thinking like, am I here? Am I not? I'm working my ass off. What's going on? Just be upfront with them.
And they maybe have had those conversations.
That's what I'm saying. They may have had those conversations.
And maybe they do view him as an integral part of the team moving forward. Yeah. But if they did, don't you think that he'd at least come up in the conversation whenever you're asked several questions about the receiver
position? Because you're talking
about
the receiver room.
And he gets several opportunities to bring him up. I think that's telling. I don't need you to, you know, the silence is deafening there, at least to me. So we'll see. We'll see. Well, whether he's here next year or not, it sounds like he's at least not moving forward an integral part of the plan.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like based upon what. And again, he may not look at Traylon as a slot receiver. My thing is just play a guy. Just play the guy. Play your best three or four guys, whether he's in a slot or not, because you're going to create a slot for an individual. Doesn't necessarily have to be the slot man. You can create a slot for D-Hop. You can create a slot for Ridley, which they will. You can create a slot for Traylon. So when you ask about the slot position, then are you not? Is it just solely those guys that are going to be in a slot, the third receiver, or are we talking they're interchangeable? Because if they're interchangeable, then Traylon should be a part of that because I can create a slot.
Why not?
You know, I can create a mismatch. So
that's an important point, I think, is if there's a player that you think is in your best 11, you find ways to get your best 11 out there. Even though you have Ridley, even though you have Hopkins. And that is telling a little bit. Now, maybe they're just intentionally doing this and saying, okay, you're going to have to work.
Yes.
Maybe the previous regime, you were the first round pick and we tried to create space for you. Now you have to create the space for yourself.
Take it.
And I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
And I don't mind having him around.
But just tell him. Let him know.
Let's see if he can do it. And if he can't, then we'll move on.
And if you can't, you've been given ample opportunity to show us that you can. We'll catch up with Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow coming up next. We'll get his thoughts and reaction on Brian Callahan's press conference. Plus, we're just a few weeks away removed from the draft. We'll get Hutton's thoughts and approach on what he thinks the Titans should do with the 7th overall pick. We'll get into that coming up next with Jonathan Hutton, Caroline Willie D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Half of every dollar meant for medicine goes to middlemen profits, leaving patients to pay more. It's time to simplify the system, cut out the middlemen, and deliver savings directly to patients.